So now we are also really privileged in the same way as Marco and all of the contributors today that Ketra Mizasuga is here as an artist. And Joey and Ketra have been exchanging quite a bit about your work, so it feels like a really nice way of continuing this exchange. You will talk about alien world and frontier environment in relation to big data.
I'm not sure what I'm
going to
talk about.
Okay, okay. We will open it up to you, and then this will be followed with some questions, and then after we will have a break.
This one.
Okay. Thanks,
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. Thanks, Joey. I've been inspired by her work for the last couple of years. We've been sort of on a similar wave with doing different things, and finally we're together here. I am not going to be as clearly spoken as the previous speaker, and I'm an artist, so a lot of the things I'm saying are already by default kind of poetic, speculative assumptions, and I can jump from domain to domain without any acknowledgement of these domains. But I'm just going to do my best to kind of, I will do my talk where I will sort of talk about certain general things, and in the end I will show a short documentation video of an exhibition I did last year in Norway that is related to the topics we're dealing with today. And let's say in last year I was invited to do an exhibition in Norway, and I make usually installations and sculptures. I'm sort of related to themes of technology and biology. My first go-to idea was to like question the sort of the resource economy of Norway and what is sort of the offshore oil rigs and the ecologies of those. But as when I sort of researched the Norwegian reality a bit, I came across this place called Loki's Castle, and it's a deep sea hydrothermal vent site. It is named after Norse god Loki, which is now in the Avengers. but before he was in Avengers, he was probably living there. This is the photo from the site. It looks like a castle. And what intrigued me was that it was described as Norway's bio gold mine and sort of the new frontier of Norwegian resources beyond oil. And the resource that was being discussed was the genetic material of the site that you can find there. And the sort of the idea of metagenomic mining, which is basically sampling lots of different life forms and sequencing their genomes and then kind of using it for industrial purposes and medical purposes and all kinds of stuff, for like industrial enzymes that are found in our detergents and food production and all kinds of industries. And this was sort of hailed as the next thing, and it's not oil, it's genetic material, sort of as a new resource frontier. And I've been interested in resource frontiers as a subject, and I've been interested in the kind of the frontier itself and how it is visualized and how it's communicated to us. So in the case of Loki's Castle, it's several thousand meters underwater in the Northern Ocean. It's completely inaccessible for, not a single human has been there, but we have all kinds of material from there, which was filmed by machines. These are sort of the examples. This is from some scientific presentations. They're just examples of certain life forms that are found there. Recently, last year, they also discovered a very specific archaea species that is only kind of located at that site, and they called it Loki archaea as well. And it's sort of, it's a weird kind of creature that is in between a prokaryotic and eukaryotic, but I'm not sort of educated enough to really explain this. But this sort of this blend of mythological naming and newly discovered life forms that I found intriguing. And the whole idea of sort of mining genetic diversity is kind of goes in hand with this in the sense and colonizing idea that we have to sort of map everything and it's everything is a resource. As soon as you are mapping something, you are automatically transitioning it into a resource available for industrial purposes, for to be instrumentalized. And this is like a little four billion years of innovations is up for grabs. It was a link on not The Economist, but Financial Times. Yeah, it's like it was just an article on Financial Times, and it's sort of in the air, this kind of language, and I'm just following that as a instead of having a Wild Wild West or having Siberia or having some sort of other regions of the earth that are considered kind of wild, this is like the furthest wilderness on earth, the deep sea environments. And it's become, because of these new robotic technologies and because of genetic sequences, it's a frontier that is actively exploring. It's a booming frontier. This is just a diagram of metagenomics, where you basically scoop something from the environment and you analyze it, and it ends up as being binary or some sort of code that is then statistically analyzed. I'm intrigued by just these things as pictures as well. So for me, this is a picture that's just like, it's the thing that happens then is like, this kind of images have never existed before. It's a new form of an image as well. It's like, what is going on here? Like, it's sort of the alchemy of, 500 years ago, but this is like the new alchemy, but it's also real. And I'm interested in the kind of the visual layer of it as well. There's a lot of reasons to search for new life forms beyond just industrial. Obviously, it's a fundamental research. It's like the fundamental research that goes back to the question of what is life. The thing, for example, is that in the deep sea environments, a whale carcass is like a city, because it takes several decades for them to degrade. So there's sort of research parallel to the hydrothermal vent sites. And this YouTube is full of these sort of videos that are from the sites, from the research, and I've been obsessively watching them for the last couple of years. The dark side of this, as there's always the dark side, as Marco explained, is the kind of the old school resource exploitation that is emerging with the discoveries of these deep sea sites. There's a Canadian company called Nautilus Minerals, and they are the first sort of company that wants to start mining of the deep sea sites. And these four words are taken from their business presentation. Metals, minerals, mining, markets, as like this is what we're going to do, and we're going to get there, and we're the first company. And basically it's about mining not the genetic material, but actually just copper and other traditional minerals from these sites, destroying the biodiversity. These minerals are needed for the propagation of computational technologies. So like, the more statistical analysis you would need to do on the microbes, the more of copper you would need to build the computers that you need. So it's the fun, this the whole fun stuff. So they would just go there and like grab the vents, grab the stuff. It's in terms of like percentage, there's a lot of really important minerals. There's a lot of gold. It's just very deep, so it hasn't been economically viable. It might become soon once we sort of strip everything else. This is just a little system of how it would work. Sort of they would drop some robots on the bottom of the sea, mine stuff, put it back up. These are the kind of the machines they're developing, which sort of looks like a Total Recall or something. if anybody remembers that movie. Their first practical site is called Solara 1, and it's off the coast of Papua New Guinea. And of course, that's like the other dark side of it is that the only states that would agree for this are the vulnerable countries with who desperately need investments, and the company struck a deal with the government of Papua New Guinea for the development of this site. I think it's set to really begin around 2019. There are also even videos on YouTube of how they're doing tests of what happens to the site once you drill, once you mine it, how fast it recovers. This is sort of this drilling, then it's like 25 months after the drilling, in case some life forms are back. There's always, they do work with, environmental consultants and stuff, but it's just, there's no way to do this thing without actually, risking a huge portion of biodiversity. Some species will recover, but every site is unique genetically. The next story is sort of basically to see the similar principle being done in the other domain, which is the domain of space exploration, which is also connected to the issue of depleting resources on Earth, and the space exploration is sort of the next beyond the deep sea. The space exploration is actually the next place to go, and it's ironically, as Katrin would say, it's better funded than the deep sea research, although it's sort of much more further and difficult. There's a lot of water in the solar system, and there's a convergence of the deep sea research and the space research. A lot of NASA operations are done for space rovers, and for astronauts are done underwater with big pressure and all that stuff. And there's a kind of a big narrative of deep sea extreme life forms being the closest to alien life forms that we can experience on Earth. And so there's sort of this there's a real, but there's also a sci-fi convergence of these two narratives. There's sort of how many seafloor chimneys does it take to light a light bulb, and so hints at the life's origins. There's all this sort of insanity that is kind of explored, which is real, but it's also the sort of motivational stuff that just keeps people interested, keeps the funding coming. There's this the main destination for a suspected life beyond Earth in our solar system is the oceans of Jupiter's satellite Europa, because it has they suspect it has a very deep ocean, and there's a source of heat at the core of the satellite, so of the moon, so that there could be like a hydrothermal activity there, so it could be a life form. And this sort of and basically, the scientists want to go to Europa to see the potential of new life forms. And this company, Planetary Resources, which is a company that wants to go to the space, to asteroids and to moons for minerals as well, as in the case of Nautilus minerals. And basically, the idea is as well that it's just a lot of important minerals that are just chilling out there, and we should just go and sort of colonize them and make more computers and other things that we need. And it's another sort of big $1 trillion industry that is developing in a parallel manner to the deep sea thing. And there's even like I've seen a graph where they sort of say the pros and cons of deep sea versus space mining, and they call it exothermic economical activity, which is basically taking energy out of the environment. This is like a model of the gold rush, the space gold rush. You don't need to really look at it. It's just this is a thing. on the website of this company. But it all basically kind of is empowered by this. The first step is to map these environments and to sort of filter the data that we're getting from the process of mapping, and which is, you know, just visual and all kinds of any sensory information we can get from the environments. It has to be mapped and has to be properly filtered. These are just examples of mapping and filtering information. On this is like a galaxy, and this is a cell, a living cell, and this sort of two types of environments that have to be two types of frontiers that are being at the moment mapped, and with the goal of eventual instrumentalize it. What intrigues me about the mapping part is that, you know, for us on the top it's a whale carcass, and on the bottom is sort of a scheme of how it is actually, what it takes to get that picture, and it's almost like a photo shoot, or it's like a fashion photo shoot. The tripods, and you have a battery, and you have a camera, and the lights, and it really looks like something you would find in a photo shoot when you're shooting a person or a product. And so these images that are sort of that how we see the environments and not how they actually look like, it's just dark there. There's no light, there's no lasers, there's no robot hands. But because we're using all these tools, for us it sort of merges together, that we cannot not see these images without this light. We cannot not see this reality without having this light or the robotic hand in the image. Our role is to be somewhere and just look at the screen and sort of as just visual data. But the actual seeing is done by machines. This is from some other presentation I saw. A new era in ocean sciences, as instantaneous internet access to complex events far offshore enables interactive real-time responses to complex energetic processes unfolding within our oceans. So it's like this idea that the ocean is online. If we have robots there that are kind of are there and they're connected to us, it's sort of like, you know, it's cozy now. It's not just some dark hole at the bottom of the sea. It's becoming more and more connected to our life. You know, you can have a Snapchat from the bottom of the ocean, let's say. And this is for me, the aesthetic of it is intriguing. Just this little green laser with the light, with the strong light, is sort of, it's installation art in its purest. And this is an example of autonomous lander that is sort of goes into the sea. And they just kind of drop it. It's falling, and it just falls, and then it just starts doing its thing at this at the bottom. And some more pictures. It's doing all the stuff. You saw all this stuff in Joey's video as well. These are the types of objects that end up at the bottom of the sea. Again, this, for me, they kind of have this very weird sculptural property about them, just like the diagrams. It's a new aesthetic language almost that is, they almost look like creatures as well, and then where there's this sort of interaction between the creatures because the crabs get curious about all these robots and they climb on them and the octopuses and whoever else is there. And so there's this immediate interaction between the robotic life forms, machinic life forms, and the sort of the alien life forms. That's like their first experience with humanity, is just these machines, and they wouldn't even know we're there, actually. And this is a drawing of a robot, sketch for a robot to go to Europa, to the space mission Europa, that would fly to the moon and then sort of swim around the ocean in Europa and take pictures and send this data to Earth. And these robots that are sort of being developed right now, they're clearly having some sort of mimicry with phenotypical mimicry with the creatures that do actually live at the bottom of the sea. So it's like a worm-like creature, soft robot rover, this kind of cutie. This is like, for example, they're doing tests already for some sort of rover navigating. Instead of the bottom of the instead of the seafloor, they're thinking maybe to just attach things to the bottom of the ice layer, so it would just sort of be reversed rovering. This all comes sort of on the shoulders of giants like Curiosity rover on Mars, who is sort of, it has a certain degree of artificial intelligence to it, of how to navigate the place. It lives in the desert, Mars is a desert, so Curiosity is more of a little kind of spidery thing rather than a worm, but it's all sort of adjusted to the environment, obviously. But Curiosity is like the most advanced robotic entity somewhere outside of Earth right now, who is there to explore, to sort of to provide this visual frontier for us. And you know, in that sort of romantic sense, of course, the one day these creatures will be more and more self-aware, the ones that are being sent there, and somehow the actual experience and the actual sensing and the awareness of the alien world will come from the machine and not human, most probably in that way. And what my work is basically, what I'm doing with all this stuff is that I'm just getting inspired from this, and I'm just trying to kind of read that this information as different patterns of forms and stories that I just want to digest and then make my own pattern that would kind of capture the mood of that, of this world, of this reality, of this issue. And in the end, I made an installation which was called Pattern of Activation, Loki's Castle. It's just a picture from the opening in a way. And I made this sort of machines from, this is the installation. I made the machines from baby swings. Because the sort of the funny thing with these robots is that they're quite like, they can be structurally quite simple. The ones that go, they're the deep sea ones, they have this sort of this tripod simplicity to them, but they have these funny hands and heads and stuff, and they sort of just followed with my intuition to develop things that look like rovers, that look like robots, but actually very simple machines. And I used a lot of plastic and stuff because I don't feel guilty anymore because it will be eaten by somebody. So no plastic guilt. It's just pictures, and then I'll show you the video. I'm obsessed also with the sort of the live streaming and the kind of the video element of the whole issue, but in this case I'm using baby monitors as my complex camera system. Okay, let me show this. Some stills. Also reptilian eyes. And then, let's find it. And that, I just want to say thank you. This video is 2-3 minutes, and then after that I'm done. I'm just gonna stay here, make sure it works. Oh yeah, just a second. The poem in the video is in my collaboration with my with a friend, and her name's Agatha Laura. It's her voice.
Is this simply the seasonal moon or nature unfolding? The semiotic life form or the sweet emergence of aggregate patterns? The innocence of a harmless thing or the tender limbs of a technological animal? A cluster of plastic fringes and laser pointers or a beached whale from a forgotten land? The shapeshifter caught in midday slumber, or or an object for human gaze. An expression into timescapes they cannot see. A loving hydrothermal vent mother, or black smoker father. The sea of symbolic collapse, or the terror of clarity. The tender luster of Jupiter, Europa, and Saturn's ensemblance. Of shamic twitching, or the heartbeat of a new aesthetic frontier. Is it a creative colony of parasites, or emotional reaction? Or is this sweet babe the presence of God's ghostly hand that I sent into torpor, into the brink of nothingness? Is this sweet babe the sea's new moon, or nature has fallen? The semiotic life form, or the sweet emergence of African patterns? The innocence of a hornless thing, or the tender limbs of a technological animal? A cluster of plastic fringes and laser pointers, or a beached whale from a forgotten land? A shapeshifter caught in a midday slumber, or an object for human gaze. An expression into timescapes they cannot see. A loving hydrothermal vent mother, or a black smoker father. The sea of symbolic collapse, or the terror of clarity. The tender luster of Jupiter, Europa, and Saturn's ensemblance. Of shamic twitching, or the heartbeat of a new aesthetic frontier. Is it a creative colony of parasites, or emotional reaction? Or is this sweet babe the presence of God's ghostly hand that I sent into torpor, into the brink of nothingness?
Thank you.
Yes, just a stylistic question in a way, but with some sort of philosophical ramifications, and that's the way that you kind of documented the exhibition. I kind of assumed that you were replicating the sort of movements of a remote kind of roving unit.
Yeah.
And I just wondered whether or not, in trying to kind of replicate that sort of documentation, there's a weird kind of feedback loop that ties into maybe your kind of obsolescence as somebody who documents, or your kind of ability to document, or whether or not that throws into question your kind of agency as someone who's capable of documenting.
The kind of, I see myself in this as a filter as well. So I'm like just a filter, filtering the information. But it's sort of, like, I don't think the video is sort of done from, yeah, the agency of the entity that is, the video is not me or the exhibition visitor. It's more like just sort of as if one of these machines would make a video or something like that. But it's a play, it's a pretend play, of course, so it's, I didn't put it on the machine, it's not a drone footage. It could have been a drone footage, but I was too lazy to do that. I was like, ideally it would have been maybe a drone for like flying through the thing, but I was like, I don't have time for this. Okay. So it was me filming it. But the kind of this sort of this, I guess the camera itself maybe is the agency, but then the camera that is floating at the deep sea or something like that, that as a form of seeing, that would intrigue me a lot. Like this, because when you watch this video, the camera is always at this floating location, and you sort of jump from one place to the other. And that just this mode of seeing was very intriguing. And it is still, there's a qualitative difference between that and drone, but this the way I tried to approximate it, that's basically another thing, is this filtering and approximating. So the way I tried to approximate it was like this, you know. But I find that, yeah, the part of this sort of going beyond the human agency idea is to try to feel the experience, like kind of try to imagine the experience of non-human entities experiencing the world, and I guess this is like one way of doing that. Yeah. Yeah, but it's still my toy, so I'm still just playing in that sense. I'm not. They didn't make this art; it's my art. Yeah. I don't know if that's answered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. There's more questions. That was very interesting.
No, first, thank you very much. I thought that was fascinating and really thought provoking. Is the exhibition actually still available to view somewhere, or is it finished now?
It was like a year ago in Norway, but the work is still there. It's going to China, so it will be in China next year. That's the only real place that it will be like this, looking like this again. So. If you ever happen to be in China next March, in Shanghai, you are welcome to see it.
Any other questions or comments for Katja?
Is this time for a break?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.